and welcome to the High Functioning Hotspot with me, Dr. Chloe Carmichael. I'm the clinical psychologist, author of Nervous Energy, and of course, your host of the High Functioning Hotspot. Today's guest is Meredith Arthur, who is a super interesting person. She's in charge of new products and experiences at Pinterest, especially in the area of mental health and wellness. She also is a mom who has a stay-at-home husband. She's also somebody who openly talks about her experience of being diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. Plus, she's the author of an amazing book called Get Out of My Head, Inspiration for Overthinkers in an Anxious World. It's a book I have myself, and I really think it's a great book. So I hope you enjoy the conversation I had with Meredith. She was very open and very vulnerable. She talks about everything from being in weekly meetings with the CEO of Pinterest to her personal journey as an editorial assistant in New York long before she was able to find the great deal of success that she's been able to find today. So without further ado, I give you Meredith Arthur. Meredith, thank you so much for joining me today on the High Functioning Hotspot.
Dr. Chloe, thank you so much for having me. It's great to see you again.
Yeah, it's great to see you too. It was a really good time that we had on Pinterest. How is your vision board doing?
It's thriving. I feel like you really gave me some new ideas and it's like continuing to grow. I'm loving it.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, I just have to say, as a psychologist, I was so excited that Pinterest was starting to just really recognize all of the psychology and really the power behind images and how they could stimulate people to just, you know, put them together in new energizing ways.
Agreed. You brought a whole new angle into things that I really appreciated. I thought it was just a little eye-opening of different ways to think about for different types of brains. Like if someone is very meticulous, they can have one approach. And then if you're more loose and interested in sort of bigger visualization, that just was a great insight, I thought.
Yeah, I'm just grabbing my notepad here because I should know when I talk to a high functioning person like yourself, there's going to be so many like little questions that I have and everything. So I'm really glad that that was fruitful for you because I certainly enjoyed it. Now, I also got a chance to appreciate some of your work, which
Yay! Is
this wonderful book, Get Out of My Head, Inspiration for Overthinkers in an Anxious World. Now, I mean, I have to admit, Meredith, I'm still trying to connect the dots here. So I studied your bio and I like tried to learn, but I'm still trying to connect the dots. Like can you tell me a little bit about your career
yes.
journey and
you how know what, Dr. Chloe, I am like connecting the dots as well. It has been a very unusual career journey. So I started my career many, many years ago in New York in book publishing. I left New York not knowing what was going to happen next, moved to Seattle, worked with authors there, moved down to San Francisco, not knowing what was going to happen next, started working on a food magazine. And I basically, that food magazine was bought by CNET. That was bought by CBS. I worked at CBS for 7 years building a site called Chowhound, and then went to the Food Network because I did both video and product. So I thought about how websites are built and worked with engineers and designers. And I also thought a lot about content. And then I ended up on a startup journey. I was at 5 different startups in 3 years. And in the middle of it, I was at long last diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. And that was a week before I turned 40. And it was right before I was let go from a startup. So I had sort of a reckoning moment in my life that was fantastic, actually, because I had migraines, nausea, lots of symptoms my entire life, but no one had diagnosed me. I had gone to 5 different therapists and no one spotted like, hey, you're having physical symptoms as a result of perfectionism, overthinking, and people pleasing. In fact, I was such a people pleaser in my meetings with therapists. They'd be like, you're funny. You're great. You're doing great. But it, you know, I fainted on a bus and I was getting sicker and sicker during the startup. So this moment of discovery for me was pivotal. As you can imagine, it changed everything. I started building a website for other people like me. So my neurologist who diagnosed me said, hey, I see three people in Silicon Valley every day who have these same symptoms, but most of them just won't listen to me. Most of them won't hear me and believe that this is what's going on. So I did. Like the second she told me, I was right there for it, and started to just get very curious. So I built a website called Beautiful Voyager, which is bvoya.com, for people to come together and really share their insights. Because I knew that I couldn't be the only one, but I didn't. It took me a while to learn how to spot an overthinker, which may be what you call high functioning. I think it's super interesting that you said for a high functioning person, and that's how I feel when I meet a fellow Beautiful Voyager. I'm like, I see you. I know how you are. So then after working on that and working on the, you know, I led the biggest, and it's still, I'm the editor of the biggest Medium publication on mental illness or mental health, really, called Invisible Illness.
Did you say?
I'm the editor of the biggest publication on Medium.
The editor of it. Okay.
Yes. So like helped start that publication, bring lots of new writers in, connect people with each other. So I did that both on Medium and I did that on my own site. And then after doing that for 5 years, in addition to my job, I always had a job. So my job was at the startups, and then I moved in back into big companies. I worked at Zillow for 2 years, which was great. And then
what for Zillow?
So I was senior content marketing manager, really video. I was doing video production and writing in lots of different ways, working again with engineers and designers and, you know, figuring out what we were trying to say to people. In particular, I was working on a campaign about being neighborly, which I loved, which was for Trulia. So it was how to build a more neighborly world, which really resonated with me and I loved. But then this opportunity opened at Pinterest, and I was about to publish this book that you mentioned, Get Out of My Head. And
Get Out of My Head. Well, it's a beautiful book, you know, for anyone like that. Some people are just listening. Sorry, I have like a blur. So
yeah, yours is blurry. Here, let me show. I can show. Yeah. It's got a lot of hand done art.
This is a beautiful book.
Handcrafted. And then there's a little book in the back.
I love it.
That the little book is supposed to be like a little piece of medicine or vitamin for you. If you need it, you can just put it in your back pocket. And it also has original art by Leah Rosenberg, who was the former director of the Color Factory of New York.
It is a beautiful book. That was okay. I don't want to get too sidetracked, but I was going to ask you about that. We can definitely talk about that.
I'll just finish that last piece for you, which is I was passionate about this topic. I was working in this topic like at every moment outside of work. But one of the co-founders of Pinterest said, hey, I'm looking for someone with mental health, content, and product experience. And I was like, how many people like that can there be? Like I'm that person. And so I got very lucky to connect with Pinterest and work on truly amazing projects there. And so now I've been there for a year and a half. I'm on the emerging products team. I work very closely with the CEO of Pinterest on emotional well-being. So that's how you and I met, because I was working on one of the emerging products launches for Pinterest Live. And you and I were on a really great session that you led around creating vision boards. And as the emotional well-being person, that I was the one that got to be on that with you.
Which it was super fun. Now, part of, you know, what I'm interested in for the high functioning hotspot, obviously, is, you know, partly just to, you know, talk about this awesome book. But really, it's also on the high functioning hotspot. I like to look at people, even just whose life journeys have been ones that maybe other people wouldn't have come out on top, so to speak, right? And so I'm curious, and I have some questions about, you know, what you shared that I hope could be illuminating for other people, you know, that are listening and trying to understand that. So, but one context question first, when you left New York and you had been in New York working in publishing. What were you doing in publishing at that time?
I was an assistant editor at a book publishing house called Harcourt. And it was a different era of publishing. I mean, I could see that the business was struggling in general, like the business of book publishing, but I got to work with the most amazing writers. I was working with Nobel Prize winners. I mean, I was just at this little literary fiction and nonfiction world of just incredible people and incredible editors.
Neat. And then how did you then get to a place where you were, for example, in San Francisco, building a site? Like most assistants don't have this website building skills. How did that come in?
So I got very lucky in the people that I met. I chose my mentors well. So I looked for people that really resonated with me. And in particular, there was an amazing woman who was starting a food website called Chow. It was a really long time ago. And she had worked at Rolling Stone and she was so cool. And she just had a really great editorial sense. And she wanted to do something very different. This was before Instagram. This was before any of this. So she just had a really clear sense of what was missing in the market. And I just kind of signed up to work with her. And she had like editorial chops. She knew what needed to happen and she knew what people would be interested in. And so we built the magazines, print magazines, but then we started to build a website on the side and got very lucky that CNET was looking for a brand to wrap around Chowhound, which was kind of discussion boards about food. This was a long time ago, but this was like what was happening then. So they acquired us. And through that, I got this experience where I got to try different jobs. I organized photo shoots. I organized video shoots. I got to build a brand really the ground up. So
they just rotated you around because they
I'm a generalist and I'm a problem solver. So I kind of go, it's unusual in tech, actually. I mean, I talk to people at Pinterest and they're like, who are you? Like, what is this? This is so strange. But
enigma that is Meredith Arthur.
it is unusual and it has been both a challenge and a success for me. I mean, it's been both. I can't say that it's always been super easy to be someone who floats into different worlds. And, you know, my core strength is as a producer. I know how to write. I know how to create interesting things. I know what I would want to see and how to make that happen. So I have a very strong editorial background, but you know, I also love working with engineering and love working with design and love building. So I have been very lucky. I feel like Pinterest is a place where I've been able to do the widest variety of work that spoke to me. Neat. So well,
I want to highlight just, you know, what I'm noticing as one of the big strengths that I think is helping, you know, you to have made all these jumps, you know, just in my, you know, off the cuff noticing again, just with my obsession with high functioning people. So a lot of people, Meredith, have that ability to be really creative, but they don't have the ability to function within a business setting, right? And so what you did that I'm noticing is, you know, you obviously just have that natural creative drive that comes to a lot of people just very naturally. But what you were, or not necessarily me, but a lot of artists, they're just, they have this, you know, God-given wellspring of creativity. But what you did that you mentioned is that you also attached yourself and were willing to work under others and take direction from whether it be a mentor or a corporation or whatever, that you were willing to kind of submit yourself and work within a bigger framework. That's very powerful, that I think probably helped you to be where you are today.
I love that point. I think that is a really great point. I have learned after this long career that my biggest success comes from when I get to be in a small startup-like setting in a big company. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've been very lucky to find those situations. It was like that at CBS. It was like that at the Food Network. The startups obviously were all startup-y and now I'm in a startup-y kind of situation within Pinterest. So
that's a perfect segue because my next question is, as you said, you were in 5 startups in 3 years. I work with a lot of people you know, that are in some way, they either have a startup or they're thinking about joining a startup or whatever. And people are always afraid to join startups because, you know, there's not a lot of predictability. But then of course, you know, they're like, they love the idea of the freedom and the latitude and the startup energy, but they, you know, miss the security and the predictability of a corporate, you know, more, you know, established corporate job. Do you have advice for people that are evaluating a startup and trying to figure out, is this one that's just going to be like totally chaotic with some kind of a brat CEO going to like yell at everybody and like, you know, there's, we're going to wish to God that we had an HR department, like, or is this going to be like one of those cool startups, like where it really works out? Like how,
I would say, Dr. Chloe, you can never think it's going to work out. I mean, you should assume it will not work out. You should be going into a startup for a different reason. And that reason should be, which skills can you acquire? And you should be thinking of it that way. You should enter the startup thinking, okay, I'm here to build my own content program, for example, or I'm here to get to work more closely with a CEO in order to get that skill set, or, you know, to build a financial model, like whatever your desire is, it should be to achieve that thing. And know that like the rest.
And then if the startup works out, that's just the cherry on top.
I mean, that is like one in a million to me. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I've been at five of them. Like it's one in a million that it's actually going to work out. So you should really be pretty ruthless about your own learning agenda and the story you plan to tell when you're done. You should say to yourself, okay, you know what? I'm interviewing at my next job. I built this financial model from scratch.
Who told you to think about it this way? Because I love this way of thinking about it.
No one ever told me to do this.
Had that awareness.
No one ever told me to do this. This is just like hard won experience. This is just being in the thick of it. And you know what? Honestly, Dr. Chloe, it's survival instincts. Like a lot of it, this for me, when you say like, how did you come through this? It was horrendous. Like the five startups were very, very hard. And I had many people in my life saying like, should you just leave tech? What should you do? But I just didn't see it as an option. I didn't know how to leave. Like to me, this was what I was doing. There were elements that I loved. And yes, I was running into brick walls over and over. I was at three startups in 1 year. It was horrible.
Do you mind sharing like what your parents do and how your childhood shaped you to be someone that would just naturally have that insight that you just described?
Absolutely. So my father, he was a lawyer who was sort of self-made. So he came from a more challenging background in Ohio and built his own law practice in Defiance, Ohio. And had a very strong sense of like standing up for the little guy. That was the line he would always say, well, I'm here to stand up for the little guy. And he just had a strong individuality. I would describe him as a bit of an entrepreneur as well. And didn't care what other people thought of him. Like just, he was his own, you know, charismatic, charming person who actually went to dental school. And it wasn't working out. So then went to law school, and that gave him a special sauce himself. Like he had this medical background, but also was a lawyer. So, you know, it definitely had an impact on me. I always thought I would be a lawyer, but some of those traits were definitely there. And my mother was a speech therapist who was stay at home and really accessible for my brothers and I. And I think that, you know, I feel very lucky for that grounding. I'm very lucky to have had that sort of two parents being around taking care of us.
Do you mean she was a speech therapist?
She was a speech therapist first.
Okay.
And then left to be stay-at-home mom. But speech therapy like still came in a lot. Like she'd mention it a lot. But the interesting thing was, you know, my father was very focused on my education, and it could be because he didn't kind of have that support growing up, but he was always pushing to get me into the best schools and the best places. And I went to boarding school, which no one ever went to from Ohio.
What age did you go?
I went, so actually earlier than that, he pushed me to go to France over a summer. And because I had a French teacher who said, Meredith will never learn French. And he was like, I beg to differ. So she's just not a language person. So he sent me to France, living alone with a family, you know, speaking no English for a summer. He did lots of things like that. He sent me to a military camp because he thought it was going to be a great experience because the neighbors did it, but it was horrible. But I pushed through. I was like, I'm going to stay for the rest of the summer, even though I always had this, like, I have to see it through. And I actually wonder in retrospect, if it was because when you do have anxiety, I just always had this, like, I got to fight it. I got to fight this. I got to push through.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now you also are a mom yourself, right?
Yes.
And so I'm not going to get totally lost on tangents because I do have my notes. I'm going to come back to where we were. But I do want to just follow up on what you said a moment ago, which is your mom gave up her career as a speech pathologist to be a stay-at-home mom and that you found that helpful. You're a mom, I'm a mom, we both have careers. So do you mind sharing like kind of what that's like for you and if you work like mainly from home or how much you work?
I have a stay-at-home husband.
Ah.
So my husband is the stay-at-home mom in our family.
Uh-huh.
He does work, but not very much. So only a couple months a year. So he's incredible. He is the reason I'm able to do what I do. He has supported me through like many twists and turns, and he's always seen my potential. And he's always been at our side, at my side. He sees his job as to take care of my daughter and I.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, I work, but I will say that since having my son, I've worked like much, 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 much less. Like it's been like a really big change for me. But I think that might in part just be because my son is 4. Like I don't imagine it always being like that. But you know, my husband is not a stay-at-home husband, but he does work from home often. So if I have situations where you know, like I want to do something, it's not a big deal. And I actually, of course, think it's really healthy for kids to have time and interaction, you know, with both parents and even for my son to just, you know, see me doing what I do. I think that's great. But anyway, back to you. So I want to go down to the other questions that I had about what you shared earlier, which is that you said several therapists and because of, you know, your people pleasing or, you know, whatever it was that they had missed, you know, this underlying diagnosis. I'm just curious because one of the things that I try to do is educate the public about choosing and evaluating a therapist, because I think a lot of people, they just, you know, the first person they call who seems available and relatable, they start talking to that person and they don't even really know like how to evaluate a therapist credentials. Do you recall like the credentials of those therapists or do you feel?
I mean,
like-
I went to trusted sources and got recommendations. And when I was really young in Seattle, you know, it was a little more random. It was sort of like, who could I find? And then as I got older, I was a little more intentional. I think the biggest struggle was that often when you go to therapy, you're asked like, what's wrong? And I didn't actually know what was wrong. I didn't know it was anxiety. So I would be like, I don't know. I mean, I didn't really know why I was there. I kind of generally must have felt something, but I certainly couldn't articulate it and was very disconnected from it. I would describe like my thinking feels like a balloon that I'm holding. And my head is very disconnected from my body. Like I kind of could say that, but I just, it's really hard when, and I really feel for people that are looking for a therapy connection if they don't understand these things about themselves, because often you're asked like, well, what's wrong or what do we need to do? And if you don't know, that's one of the biggest challenges. Those are the people I really am always trying to reach.
Yeah. I'm going to put a thing in the show notes. I do have an article called How to Choose an online therapist. And so I kind of talk a little bit even about how to interview a therapist and things like that. So I'll make a note to do that. So Meredith, I know, again, I love that you're so open and, you know, shared that eventually, like, you got this ADHD diagnosis.
Oh, no, it was generalized anxiety disorder.
I'm sorry, generalized anxiety disorder.
Yeah.
Do you feel like there's actually, in a weird way, like a plus to that side of you?
I've thought about this a lot. And I tend to say, and I feel like this might be different. I still need to read your book and I'm really looking forward to it. I feel like this might, I think that there, I don't think anxiety helps me very much. Like, I think that anxiety is an obstacle for me to overcome. That I learn to live with in harmony or as best I can to really like spot it and understand it in myself. When I was first diagnosed, I would say that it helped me, like, oh, this is my superpower. But I actually think I was kidding myself. Like, when I first met the artist who worked on my book, she was like telling herself all these things about how anxiety was helping her. And I was like, I don't think anxiety is helping you. I don't think it's helping you be better as an artist. I think you are amazing and you're doing all of this despite anxiety. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to say how our early experiences informed who we are. Like, did I have this issue that I built muscle around? And like, what did that do for me? It's hard to know, but I can say that if I had known when I was younger how to work around it and live in harmony with it, I would have been better off than some of the experiences I went through.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for that, you know, really candid and open, vulnerable answer, Meredith. I really admire just your openness. Was it always easy for you to be open and talk about this?
That's a great question. So when I was first diagnosed, I was so curious about this topic and I was really interested in it. Like, I don't feel stigma around mental health. I feel fascination. But I didn't know how to communicate it with others. There's this story I tell about my husband and I being at my daughter's school for a mindfulness class. And everyone was supposed to go around and talk about their experiences with mindfulness in the past. And when it got to me, this was right after my diagnosis, I said, well, I have generalized anxiety disorder. So blah, 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 blah. And I started talking and my husband's face just sort of like melted. Like, what are you doing? Like, these people do not know you. You cannot. And it was, you know, it was awkward. I was awkward about it because a lot of people around me have associations and those words have meaning to them. And it's kind of scary. It wasn't to me, but it was to other people. So I had to learn. I always say you have to be gawky to get to graceful. Like, I started gawky. And I mean, you know, I've always been pretty open about stuff. I love comedy. I like the humor and things. People are fascinating to me. So I never felt like embarrassed or ashamed at all, mm-hmm. but I was gawky originally.
That's very well said. And I would just say as well, like, you know, to your point about the person who's like, oh, anxiety is helping me. And you're like, oh, I don't really necessarily think so. And that, you know, you weren't sure, like, you know, if anxiety really was like a superpower for you. I would just share my take because, of course, I literally wrote the book.
No, I know. I know.
The Power of Your Anxiety. So,
yeah.
I would just say, like, in my experience with the people that I've worked with, anxiety is not necessarily helping them, you know, when it's mismanaged or misunderstood within them. And they're just trying to like shout it down or stomp it out or, you know, control it or whatever, then it does put them, you know, in a battle with themselves. But when we can understand that actually the healthy function of anxiety is to stimulate preparation behaviors, a person without anxiety would not look both ways before they cross the street, right? So learning to understand and recognize the healthy function of anxiety, and also to recognize, you know, where's the tipping point where we're going haywire with it, but also what do we do with it to really harness the healthy power of it? For me, like, that was kind of the inflection point that I think was helping the people, you know, in my practice and, you know, what eventually prompted me to write a book. But I would love to know. I'm sorry.
The colleagues that I'm working with at the Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence certainly agree with you. Like, I've had this discussion with them where I always try to gently push back, like, well, that anxiety is everyday anxiety. And separating, like, as you said, the tipping point of everyday anxiety with an anxiety disorder is super important. And I think a lot of people that are looking for that, like, it's helping me. I have a friend here who's always saying, like, it's helping me. And I'm like, you have an anxiety disorder. Like, I'm not sure it's helping you, but it's that spectrum. And I think it's a really interesting discussion. It's certainly one that I have many times with many, many people. I actually think it's maybe one of the most controversial things that I push for, which is like, anxiety is not helping you. Many people want to believe it's helping them. But again, I'm talking about anxiety disorder. So there could be this other world. And I do need to read your book, by the way.
I would be so curious, because like, I would say that I think anxiety almost like morphs into that really weird, you know, pathological side of anxiety when we don't know how to handle and deal with and respond.
I certainly agree with. Yeah. So I mean, that happened for me as a kid, obviously. Like, there was a time where I didn't know how to handle, I didn't have those tools, and it just went directly into migraines in my body. Like, that's just
obviously definitely not healthy. Yes. And, you know, also I know that there are even people, as you said, that even if they know that they're handling it in a pathological way, that they can still feel attached to that pathology.
Yes.
That there is even, you know, almost like a person with bipolar can get attached, yes, you know, to the intensity of the ups and downs, and they can be afraid that, yes, if they lose that, you know, angst, that it's in some way, you know, going to take away the edge of their work and everything. So I definitely want you to check out my book. And because I think, Meredith, that we probably actually
think so too.
Things like the same, yeah, way. But, you know, getting back to books, especially with your book, can you talk about like what the writing process was like for you, how you came to write, how you came to publish, what launch, yeah, was like, all that?
This stuff also felt very idiosyncratic. So when I was about a year in on working on The Beautiful Voyager, I met with an old friend who's a literary agent, because that's what happens when you started your career in books. You have people in your life who are already in the book world. And I said to her, you know, I'm obsessed with this topic. Like, I cannot learn enough. I'm constantly reading. And she said, well, let's talk about a book. And I had so many ideas, Dr. Chloe, of these just massive undertakings I wanted to do. I wanted to commission research studies around the world to look at different ways that anxiety had presented itself in different communities. And I wanted to thread through like learnings from all those different communities. I just had so many thoughts. And started to work on it, and the thoughts just got bigger and bigger. I was clearly overthinking it. And I'm still fascinated by those topics, by the way, but it was too big. And my literary agent, Danielle, said, you know, let's set it aside for a little bit. Let's just see what happens. She's so smart. And 4 years later, I was in a conversation with someone who wanted to write a book. And I was just talking them through, like, here's some things to think about. Let's think about this. And I realized, like, hey, you are ready. You want to do this. So I started by taking that 5 years of writing that I had done and pulling out the threads that interested me and trying to lay out what that might look like. Just trying to think about the structure and what those threads were. And it happened very quickly from there. Like, it was, you know, January is when I started. I sold it in early March, and it was published, you know, a year after that.
Awesome. And yeah. Is there an audiobook version as well?
Yes. Yes, there is. I love it. I love doing the audiobook. It was so fun. I worked with this amazing sound engineer who had done the Beastie Boys audiobook right before mine. I was like, this is,
what's his name?
Jake. What is his last name? I should remember because I love
him. Oh, that's okay. I was just curious because I feel like it's not the same person. I worked with Scott Sherritt, and he did, I think, like some other people's books. But anyway.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I thought we might've had the same audio engineer for a sec there.
But that'd be so fun.
Yeah. Well, Meredith, I know that I promised you that I wouldn't keep you all day. So I want to be respectful of your time, but is there anything that I have not asked you about that you would like to share?
I mean, I just love talking to you and I'm so grateful to you for wanting to connect. I love that you said, like, after I met you, I felt like we would have more to say. And I definitely feel that's true. And I just want to express my gratitude to you for feeling that and following up.
Oh, well, the pleasure is truly mine. Honestly, that's one of the greatest fun things for me with the High Functioning Hotspot is, like, it gives me like the right format and the right platform that when I meet someone like you, where I'm like, wow, what an interesting high functioning person. I could just, I'd love to ask you some questions.
It's so cool. I
finally get the chance.
Yeah.
So thank you. And I just want to say again, get out of my head. Inspiration for overthinkers, trying to get out of the blur there. Inspiration for overthinkers in an anxious world. And it is a beautiful book. You said that the color, it was done by the, you, can you
the former director of the Color Factory. She is incredible. She did it with pen, by pen, and then risographed the work. And it's, we just spent a lot of time talking about these different chapters and how they should feel. This element was really, really important to me. I ended up commissioning the art myself and commissioning a designer to work on it too. So the three of us met weekly because I wanted to be in contrast to some of the other books on anxiety out in the world that I had seen that caused me anxiety. Like they didn't seem to understand how to unlock this feeling of curiosity that I had.
Yes.
And it was through art that I thought that helps unlock the feeling I have.
I love that. I really love that. And I just have one more question for you as well. So, you know, you mentioned, for example, like getting into the Pinterest position kind of through networking, and then that, you know, you knew this person that was able to, you know, collaborate with you on the art. Another area that I work with people just a lot around and talk about a lot is networking. Mm. And, you know, I personally as well, am very thankful to my own network. And I mean, can you share with people that are thinking to themselves, damn, I wish I had a network like Meredith has? Like, how did you, any tips for people out there that are thinking that question?
Yes, I do have a tip. You don't have to know everyone. You just have to know the people that you find the most fascinating. I think it's a matter of, I mean, I've always chosen my people along the way. I mentioned that around the woman that I worked with on the food magazine, but to me, I try to tune in to like, ooh, I want that person. Mm-hmm. And people have done that to me too. And I'm always really appreciative. It's very intentional. It's not, I'm going into a room to know everyone. It's like, is there one person in this room that I'm super interested in? I just think it's helpful. It narrows your focus and it has served me incredibly well to sort of tune into that side because I genuinely want to connect with that person.
And then once you target who that person is, any tips on like how you actually translate that into actually, you know, striking up a conversation and knowing the person?
It's a good question. I mean, by the way, podcasts are a good way to do it. Like, I also have a podcast and I do the same thing you do where I'm like, you're interesting to me. You have something interesting going on. That's like a nice entry. I tend to just focus on what they are interested in and just, I don't know. I try to be funny. I try to be like non-businessy. Mm-hmm. I think being businessy is a turnoff for me. I just do what like would make me interested.
Yeah,
I try to like speak in the way that would make me interested. If I hear someone being like fun and vulnerable, I'm like, that's the person I want to be near.
Yeah, definitely, Meredith. Well, you're an interesting person to me. And so thanks again for taking the time.
Thank you so much, Dr. Chloe. I love getting to know you.
The pleasure's mine. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Wow, that was an amazing conversation. It's kind of a rare find, honestly, to meet somebody like Meredith that is, you know, such a straddler of the creative side, but also of the business side. It was really such a privilege to just, you know, see how her mind works and have the chance to ask her about everything from, you know, networking to mental health to marital life and everything. I mean, that woman is kind of an open book, shall we say. And so, you know, just one more time talking about books. I know my screen is blurred, but I just want to hold this up one more time of Meredith's incredible book, Get Out of My Head, Inspiration for Overthinkers in an Anxious World. I honestly think it's a really great book. So I want you to check out my book, of course, Nervous Energy, Harness the Power of Your Anxiety. But I think also Meredith's book is a really excellent book as well. So thanks again for watching. I hope that if you enjoyed the episode, you will like, comment, subscribe, share, etc. It helps me a lot in all of the algorithms. Thanks again and have a good rest of the day.